Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Definitive loss. That's the nothing personal word of the day. And it is a Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. And Scott Boras and Blake Snell have taken a definitive loss. Word came out last night that Blake Snell has joined the San Francisco Giants. He joins Carlos Correa, Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, and Barry Bonds on a team that is trying to fight in a division with two teams who start the season in 22 hours from now, the Padres and the Dodgers. You've got the reigning National League champion Diamondbacks, and then you've got the Rockies in a division that it's like an arms race. But I'm going to spend my time with you explaining what went on and the ramifications of this situation, because we've been talking about Blake Snell for months on this program. The way that we mark time, in addition to how thankful we are for you to give us 45 or 50 minutes of your time every single day, we mark time with wait to sees, where we talk about things that are going to happen, and then either way, we'll revisit them, I promise you. So you know that I'm going to revisit you when I said to you on Valentine's Day that Blake Snell was going to sign with the Yankees. He didn't. That's a no. Then you may recall that I told you on November 17th of 2023 that Blake Snell would sign for under 5 years. That sounds like a yes, except I already took the loss because only 3 days later, I said Blake Snell would sign for more than 5 years. So now I'm taking a double no. It's a no everywhere as it relates to Blake Snell, because why would I think that this would be the year that would be different than all other years? I asked myself four questions heading into this offseason. Manish Tana, Halila Hazeh. The first question I asked, will this possibly, it's $5 to Jessica. Will this possibly be the year that I can recline, eat some unleavened bread, and say Scott Boras will be taken down? Every year I've said the same thing. Every year I've been wrong. This year I looked up at the sky. I said, I don't think his players are worthy of the numbers he's been promised. Let's take a look and see what's going to happen. And we were looking at Chapman and Montgomery and Bellinger and Snell. On February 14th, the same day I told you Snell was going to the Yankees, I said, something's awry here. Something's amiss. One of these Boras players is going to have to take a 1+1. Bellinger got the 2+1. Or did he get the 5? I'm blanking on what Bellinger got from the Cubs. I know that Chapman got the 2+1. I cannot remember Bellinger's deal, Coca. I'm crying out for help at 4 minutes after the show starts. He got 3 with opt-out after 1. So we did not have a player, Montgomery still unsigned. We didn't have a player who did the 1+1 until now. So that wait to see on February 14th came true. So Blake Snell calls up Scott Boras and says, listen, Scott, it's March 18th. We have opening day in 9 days. Forget the Dodgers and Padres who open tomorrow. The Padres don't want me back. The Dodgers don't have room, although they could probably use pitching. So we really only have 9 days until opening day. You have to sign me. Well, Blake, let me tell you how we're going to spin this, Scott said. I'm going to get you to the Giants. I'm going to get you $62 million guaranteed. But Scott, there was rumors yesterday that I wanted $66 million. You already floated out a pillow deal. You're telling me I can't even get that? Well, Blake, when I float stuff out, you should just know. I don't actually have anything. I'm just floating it out so that owners will say, oh my God, someone's going to give him a pillow deal of 66. I better go a pillow deal of 67. And then you'll get more than what I thought you'd get, and you'll be happy with me as your agent. Until the teams realized that every time Boras opens his mouth, he's lying. And every time there's a float of a story, like Blake Snell saying, yeah, I'd be willing to look at $66 million from a team. That has zero impact. Until this year, it had total impact. Now, all of a sudden, it's like Boras has become binary. It means nothing what he says, what he leaks. So the Giants get the call and they say, all right, you know, we'll go with 62 over two. However, the most we're going to pay him this year is $15 million. That's it. So if you promised him some sort of cash flow above that, you're going to have to take it out of Boras Corp because we ain't doing it. Boras says to them, please, you're making me look so bad. Is there any way? Can I speak to Bear Johnson? How about Farhan? I'll even speak to the assistant GM. You can't give me such a loss with this signing. This is the Cy Young champion. And the Giants stood firm. And guess how many other teams were in on Snell at the end of the day? Zero. Here's how I know. He got $62 million over two with an opt-out after one. They gave him the opt-out. But the cash flow is $15 million this year and then a $17 million signing bonus that's not payable until 2 years from this past January, until January of 26. The fact that Boras couldn't do better for Snell shows you that not only did he overstate what the market is for Snell, but the owners, not collectively, have decided game over for Boras. So Snell now joins this rotation. He joins a team that's trying to hang in there in a division where if they see third place, it will be a Barry Manilow situation. Do not allow for anyone in the media to call this a good deal for Blake Snell. Do not allow anyone to tell you that Boras got what he wanted for Snell so he can get another bite at the free agent apple next year. Don't buy into any of the rhetoric that is sure to come from Boras Corp. What you will get if the Giants even do an announcement, and this is the other thing I'm looking for, this late in spring training, to do an official welcome press conference where Boras demands to be at the table. Look for Boras when he's at the table, like he was with Chapman and Bellinger, to talk about the irregularities in the market. But I'm not sure that's going to happen. And the reason I'm not sure that's going to happen is the situation that is going on right now within the Major League Baseball Players Association. Let's talk about the Major League Baseball Players Association. Let's go back, if you will indulge me, to when there was that 99-day lockout. Let's go all the way back to during the course of the lockout, Tony Clark, the head of the MLBPA, had brought in a ringer, and the ringer's name was Bruce Meyer. Bruce Meyer had no experience in baseball. He had never been a part of previous CBAs, and he came in like meatloaf, like a bat out of hell, and he was impossible to deal with. And the players thought, well, this is great. We have someone who is going to stand up for us. He's going to represent us. He's not going to care so much about our comforts. He's going to care about our economics. And he's willing to fight. Day 40, 50, 60, 70, players missing paychecks, threatening to end the season. Don't forget about all that was going on during the lockout. That was only, is it 2 years ago or 1 year ago? Has COVID screwed with anybody's timeline? I cannot remember when MLB's lockout was, Coca. was it, did last season start late or was it the season before in 22? It is unbelievable that my brain is this way, but it doesn't matter. It was 22. So go back. Thank you, Coca. You have that off the top of your head? You're the one, you and I talked pre-show. I wish people would listen. Maybe one day we'll let people listen to our pre-show where you and I talk about the craziness of time and how since COVID, we cannot sort of remember how many years have passed or what year it is or the way time is flying. I think you gave me a quote yesterday. This was a great one. I hope you don't mind if I share it, Matt. You said, I don't care what anyone says, the earth is spinning faster. Wouldn't that be something if somehow what we've done to the environment, forgetting the politics of it, if somehow it's caused the earth to actually spin faster? I guess we'll only know when they take away, what's the day, February 29th? Are you kidding me? When they take away the leap year. Because the leap year, as you know, is because it takes 365 and a quarter days to spin around. If it's spinning faster, maybe it only takes 364 days. And now instead of a leap year, every 4 years, we're going to eliminate a day. And like 30 days has September, April, June, and November. Maybe they'll make just June 29 days. Anyway, what were we talking about? I just got distracted by time because I couldn't remember when the MLB lockout was. Ah, let's go back to that time during the lockout where the players, as they're missing paychecks, worried about the season coming to an end and actually getting canceled, not worrying so much about chefs in the kitchen, not worrying so much about time of game and off days and travel days and creature comforts, they realized, the economics are a problem now. And then when there was an agreement, who remembers what the vote was to ratify the CBA? This guy here does. Remember, there are 30 team representatives. Each team gets its own representative. Then there are 8 members of an executive council, and each one of them gets a vote. So there are 38 votes to ratify a CBA. Do you remember how the vote went? The members of the executive council who were full of players like Max Scherzer, controlled by Scott Boras, voted against ratification. The player reps all voted for ratification, and the CBA passed. There was always a thought during the last negotiation that Scott Boras was putting himself into the negotiation, using his players as mouthpieces, which is what he's done since I got into baseball. Max Scherzer can stand up all he wants and say, these are all my thoughts. I have no idea what Boras thinks. It is absolute horse hockey. Scott Boras gets to his players, and his players have this level of loyalty that is now going to disappear because the loyalty came from them getting paid numbers that they didn't think they'd ever get because owners would bail out Boras and therefore Boras's players. When that's not happening, all of a sudden players are looking and saying, I'm not sure that Boras should have this amount of power within the Major League Players Association. So then Boras says, I'm not involved. But everyone knows that he was. Everyone knows that he not only used his players, but that he was using Bruce Meyer. Except Bruce will tell you, Boras, I don't even talk to the guy. Horse hockey. He'll tell you, I'm doing this for the love of the game and to represent all players from the lower class to the upper class. Horse hockey. And guess what? The chickens came home to roost in a report that came out last night. In The Athletic, Evan Drellick and Ken Rosenthal have told you that there is major discontent within MLBPA. It's not news. It's being reported right now, but everyone in the industry has known of the discontent toward Bruce Meyer and Scott Boras since 2022. When that lockout ended, I had told you, not as an official way to see, but I had told you, go find it, that Bruce Meyer was going to be, his power would get taken away and he would not be involved in next round of CBA because it had a deleterious impact on the players and what they got in the agreement. So word is out that there was a call where reps of the union, and now there are 72, don't forget, there's still 38, 30 from major league teams, one per team, 8 on the executive council, which has now turned over, and there are fewer, if any, Boris clients on the executive council. But now the minor leaguers are part of the union. Remember when they were allowed to unionize and MLB allowed them to unionize? There's now 34 members of the minor league union, which is part of the major league union, on the full executive council, all of whom will be involved in the next CBA. They did a call with Tony Clark yesterday, Standard, where they expressed a desire to get rid of Bruce Meyer. Think about that level of mutiny. You go to your top guy. It's like going to your GM if you are the head of scouting and saying, I want to get rid of the head of development. It's like a player going to a manager and saying, I want to get rid of the pitching coach. For players to go to the number one in the union, Tony Clark, and say, I want you to get rid of the hammer who you hired, your guy, or else. Think about Tony Clark hearing this conversation, hearing this level of discontent. Do you actually think that Bruce Meyer has a chance to survive this? The fact is that the players have an alternative. They want a guy named Harry Marino to take over for Bruce Meyer. Harry was actually the lawyer who represented the minor leaguers as they unionized. Meanwhile, owners and the commissioner and the commissioner's office, let me do my imitation of them knowing how this is playing out inside the union. I'm not a very good dancer, but I'm doing the Snoopy dance right now. I'm giving you all I got, Seth Rogen. I'm doing the dice. I'm doing the dice. I'm doing the roll. The owners have wanted to make sure that Bruce Meyer's gone because they viewed him as an impediment to getting the best deal possible for them. And they put themselves in a position where now the players have realized that Bruce Meyer was an impediment to getting any sort of deal that would be even decent for the players. This is monumental because here's what happens next. Tony Clark has to decide who has the power in the union. Are they keeping the power with the upper class or are they giving the power to the middle class and the lower class? Scott Boras doesn't care about the middle class or lower class. Scott Boras is there for the top of the market only. Except the union has always been made up more of players who don't get the $400 million contracts, but they always used to stay quiet. But now you've got minor leaguers in the union, and guess what? The overwhelming majority of them will never forget free agency. They won't reach arbitration. The overwhelming majority of those members of the union will not see one day of service time. So the power balance of the union is shifting. How coincidental that it's shifting as Boras has been unable to strong arm owners to get the top of the market players what he promised the top of the market players. Do you think this is a coincidence, or is this all part of the story unfolding, which leads to Scott riding off into the sunset? This is the middle of the end for Boras and his power. Mets fans have to be thinking something right now. They've got to be thinking about Pete Alonso, a player who we've covered many times. Pete Alonso left his agent to join Scott Boras as his free agency was pending. Someone asked me a question, Coca, just yesterday on davidsamsonpodcast.com. Someone asked me, if Jordan Montgomery fires his agent right now, Boras, signs with another agent right now, and signs a deal right now, does Boras lose his commission? Let me explain. Well, for purposes of time, let me sum up. If Jordan Montgomery signs a deal that Boras started to negotiate, Boras keeps that commission. When you poach a player who has already signed a deal, the old agent gets all the commission from that deal. So if you sign a 10-year deal and get rid of your agent after 2 years, the old agent keeps all the remaining 8 years of commission for that player. But the new agent gets any new deals that happen. If you sign with a new agent when you have no deal, the way your positing that Montgomery could do, Boris would still have a claim and could file a grievance because he would claim that he deserves the commission because he laid the groundwork and the team that Montgomery signs for was a team that Boris had met with and he would have the notes. If Montgomery fires Boris and signs with an agent and they sign with a team who had not engaged with Montgomery at all, then the new agent has a claim to keep the entire commission and for Boris to get nothing, which would make every agent do a better Snoopy dance than I did. Because believe me, if you think only the owners want to put Boris out to pasture, you're only half right. The agents do as well. And the process that you're seeing now, it's happening right now. Who's going to win the power clash between Marino and Mayer? It's clear it's going to be Marino. What I'm excited about is how Tony Clark will have to announce this, because he's got to be super careful. He answers to the players. He only has his job because of the players. But on the other hand, he has to be seen as being loyal to his lieutenants. He can't have his lieutenants thinking that the players can run to their boss, meaning Clark, and all of a sudden the lieutenants lose their job. So Tony Clark, as CEO, quote unquote, of the union, executive director, he's got to tread very carefully, and his next move is going to be critical. However, no matter how you slice it, his next move will be, see you later, Meyer. Hello, Harry. So I'll give you an official wait to see. And the wait to see is that Bruce Meyer will not be part of the next round of CBA negotiations. I can promise you that. Okay. You know, it's funny when you go through this sort of unrest. It's happening. It happened when the commissioner announced that he was leaving at the end of this term. There were all these articles about who would take over, and you start looking at, is this person good enough, or does this person have the votes? And I talked to you about a bunch of $10, Coca. I talked to you about a bunch of candidates and how it's too early. Who knows if the commissioner is going to leave? It is very hard to ever get unanimity when it comes to any appointment like this, whether it's the commissioner, whether it's the head of the union, whether it's the highest lieutenant in the union. And even this Marino guy, just keep in mind, he does not have unanimous support. Even on that call, there are going to be people who are questioning, should this coup d'etat happen? And that's why I mentioned it's Clark's next move is so important. Great work by Evan and Ken. Fascinating read on The Athletic. My main takeaway, to reiterate, bye-bye, Boras. Okay. We got the season starting tomorrow. I'm going to wake up for 5:30 a.m. pregame, 6:05 first pitch, watch Ohtani. Watch the Dodgers, watch the Padres. There's nothing like opening day. Love when we open internationally. That's another dollar. I'm losing every dollar on these fines right now today. I should start Venmoing you the way they make me Venmo Jessica for the fine bucket on Levitard, Coca. Every time I do a we instead of a they, I'm going to Venmo you the dollar. Starting now, not previous. Instead of just sort of saying, I'll Venmo you, you'll keep track, and then we'll do a charity giveaway at the end. Because baseball's they, not we. Every time a season starts, as spring training ends, we touched on it yesterday, all they're thinking about is injuries. They're trying to figure out how they're going to get through it. They're doing roster management at the moment. Remember, if you start on the 60-day injured list, then you don't take up a roster spot. You're only allowed 40 roster spots, and then you choose 26 to, quote-unquote, make your opening day roster. The thing about opening day rosters and the reason why teams wait until the very end, I have a great example for this. Oh, you're never going to find it. And that's not a challenge because you will never find it. The Florida Marlins, I believe before we became the Miami Marlins, so anywhere between 02 and 12, we had a non-roster invitee, which is someone who comes to spring training. They don't have a roster spot. And if they make your opening day roster, they have to be added to the roster. And when you add someone to the roster, you are giving them a large amount of money. So we would decide who was going to be on the opening day roster, but we wouldn't tell the player until the very end of spring training, because if someone's added to your roster and gets hurt, they're on the major league. At that time, it was called the disabled list. At this point, it's called the injured list. And you get paid your major league salary. If you get hurt and you're not on the roster, you can get released, and then it's only workers' comp. Or if you're a minor leaguer, then you get your minor league pay. So for a non-roster invitee, we had someone making the team. We went to the final exhibition game where we played on the road at a minor league affiliate. It may have been Carolina. It could have been Zebulon. I don't remember where it was. But a player who was going to make the team got hurt in the final exhibition game. And then obviously we didn't add him to the roster, because that's good business. So the Dodgers and Padres are done with their exhibition games. They will solidify their 26-man roster. The other teams don't start till the 28th. They will finalize their rosters by the 26th or the 27th. But the injuries keep piling up. And I wanted to highlight a few things that are going on at the moment that are very troubling. Joe Espada, who was a coach of ours for many years, so happy he's now the manager of the Astros, so deserving of that job. He is dealing with Verlander being injured. Now he's dealing with another one of his starters, Jose Urquidy, being injured. And they left Joe Espada. They didn't let Jim Crane or Dana Brown talk about it. Joe Espada had to tell you it's a forearm strain, and that I got no other news, he said. It's a forearm strain. He's going to be on the IL. You know from nothing personal that forearm strains are BADD. You don't miss a week with a forearm strain. It's measured in months. Although, like children, you can always say, like with who's the player who just got hurt? Gerrit Cole, 10 to 16 weeks. That's like when you have a kid and you're still giving months. Yeah, my kid's 23 months. What? How about your kid's almost 2 years old? I don't like that. I like doing it in months. If a player's going to miss months, just tell me. But it always sounds worse, doesn't it? When you have an announcement that a player's hurt, we never wanted to announce it that way. This player will be gone 2 to 3 months. God, that sounds brutal. All right, let's announce this player will be gone 8 to 12 weeks. Way better. That doesn't sound like a lot of time. Isn't that funny, the psychology? So Urquidy's hurt. He's got 2 more years before he's a free agent. And remember, this is the guy who only started 10 times for the Astros last year with a shoulder problem. This is an issue for the Astros. They're hurt. They've got Valdez and Javier in the front of their rotation. Hunter Brown's decent, but they've got question marks. And they're not the only team. Take a look at the starting rotations for the 30 teams. Take a look at the list of players and pitchers who are injured, and you'll realize why contracts are the way they are. But the injury that fascinates me the most right now is not Aaron Judge. It's not Byron Buxton, because that's getting attention. Byron Buxton is the Twins player who just got, I think the Twins gave in and gave him $100 million when they didn't need to. But they always thought that Buxton was going to be a cornerstone player for their franchise. He's a really good player, except I'm as good as Buxton is because I play as many games as he does. That guy, I don't think he's ever played over 100 games. He's just always hurt. So they gave him that 7 years, $100 million deal. Remember how everyone was so happy that the Twins did it, and the Twins did it with their elbows, fingers, and toes crossed because they're guaranteed money to a player who didn't play. Guess what? Scratched. Lower right back tightness. It's always something with him. But that's not the one that interests me the most. Bryce Harper, another Boris client. That's what interested me the most. Do you remember when he signed a 13-year deal with the Phillies? No trade clauses, no opt-outs. And he said at his opening presser, I am committed to this town, and I'm going to be here for the next 13 years. I love you, Philly. And he had come from the Nationals. And then, of course, the Nationals won the World Series. And the Phillies have not yet, though they've performed well. And remember that this is the player who the owner, John Middleton, went to the player and said, man, you're underpaid, which is amazing since there's no jewelry on the finger. And this is the player who's been leaking out all offseason that he's angling for a contract extension. He's got 7 years left in a deal, and he wants an extension already. Does that ever make you wonder when a client of Scott Boras, let's talk to the Lerner family in Washington and see what it is when a player who's always injured wants a deal and agrees to a deal immediately without testing free agency. Hi, my name is Steven Strasburg, and ends up being the worst contract in the history of sports. Is it a coincidence that Bryce Harper wanted an extension on his deal and that he's had all of these issues, back stiffness, back soreness, back discomfort for the last 4 years, in and out of the lineup? Don't forget he missed games in 20, in 21, in 23. Last August, back issues, he was out. This is a guy who gives it. He's a grinder. Love him as a player. But do you think he's going to be healthy for 7 more years? Do you think his body's going to hold up for years 8 through 10 or 8 through 11 from now? There's no chance, toilet pants, that happens, DavidSamsonPodcast.com. So why is he asking for the extension? And do you think that he's still talking about it? Do you think he still has Scott Boras call up Middleton and say, hey, how about that extension? Hey, Bryce, how about if you get back on the field? Hey, I know, but look what I've done for you already. Hey, you've got 7 years left. There is zero extension coming for Bryce Harper. Zero. It would be idiocy to the 69th degree for the Phillies to give Bryce Harper a contract extension. They're pretending they're not worried. They had their manager come out and say, hey, it's just a little back stiffness. He's good. We're fine. It's all good. Like DJ LeMahieu. Fouled the ball off his foot. He's good. Don't you worry. Opening day, not so sure, but don't worry. Fine. Before we go to break, Coca, I used to really push for players to be available opening day. I had the weirdest feeling that the opening day announcements and the excitement and the announcement of the players and they line up on the baseline. I always wanted players to come back and be ready for opening day. And my GMs would always say to me, David, it's a game. It's just game one. We've got to look out for the whole season. But I never got rid of this thought in 18 years. I never did. That winning opening day was so important because it sets the tone for the rest of the year. It's total poppycock. It doesn't mean anything. All right. When we come back, we're going to review a movie I finished and want to review Ferrari. And then we're going to talk about Trevor Bauer's latest antics. This is a good one.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to Nothing Personal. It is David Sampson. Thank you for being a part of our show. We are here Monday to Friday live at 8 a.m. We've got some announcements to make. Announcements, announcements, announcements. I think that Metal Arc, which is Dan Le Batard, is working on a bit of a deal I think that this show is going to be on the DraftKings Network starting Monday, March 25th from 10 to 11 a.m. You can find the DraftKings Network on Roku, on Samsung Plus. You can find it on the DraftKings site. You can find it wherever you watch Levitard. Apparently, they've tapped us to be the lead-in show to Levitard. Stay tuned for that. The other thing that we're going to announce, but I think I'm going to talk more detail on tomorrow's show and on Levitard tomorrow. But I've been hinting about it, so I just want you to be aware that I have heard you when you go to davidsampsonpodcast.com, and I appreciate all the people who reach out, both on Twitter and on the website. So I believe that we are going to take Nothing Personal on the road. We're doing a tour, baby. Let me explain how it's going to work. For all the people who watch our show live at 8 a.m., guess what? I'm never stopping that. We're going to be live at 8 a.m. every single Monday to Friday on the Nothing Personal with David Sampson YouTube channel. Then you can watch us again on DraftKings, same show, at 10 a.m. But I think we're going to go to cities, maybe a city near you. Are you in Philly? Are you in Atlanta? What about Pittsburgh? What about Boston? What about New York City? What about Nashville? Are you in any of those places? It just so happens you may see an announcement at some point today that I will be doing a 1.5 hour Nothing Personal show at night from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at a venue in your city. It's a tour, baby. But this isn't the announcement. We're going to have it for you later. I'll never stop doing this show at 8 a.m. with all of you. I love doing it live. Coke and I are awake, ready to roll. You think I'm going to have time to watch a movie every day with this crazy schedule I'm about to have? Yep. No matter what, I don't care if I sleep 0 minutes per night. I can do it. I watch Ferrari. When you're funding that movie and you're casting Adam Driver, who is an actor who I really love, one of my favorite actors, so talented. Why are we giving him an Italian accent when he did it in House of Gucci and it was such a disaster? He's playing Enzo Ferrari. What I never understood, and I've asked people in Hollywood about this, and I can't get an answer. They ham and they haw. Hear me out. Listen to me later and hear me now. When you have a movie that takes place in Germany, and you know it's historical nonfiction, historical fiction, do you think Italian people talk to each other in English with an Italian accent? Or do you think they speak to each other in Italian? You think Enzo Ferrari was speaking broken English to the people he worked with in Italy for Ferrari? Or was he speaking Italian? But yet, when we make movies, we have those characters not speak their maiden language. They speak English, but we give them the accent. So a movie that takes place in Germany, we give people and say, hey, speak English, but in a heavily German accent. It makes no sense to me. Either speak Italian or speak English with no accent. But instead, you have a crappy Italian accent. That's Adam Driver in Ferrari. That said, it's a Michael Mann movie. I really liked it. I didn't know the backstory of Ferrari. I was not aware of the Mille Miglia of that race where all those people got killed. Spoiler alert. I was not aware of the competition that Ferrari had with Maserati. I never really thought about what the F1 cars used to look like. I never thought about how you need to sell Ferraris in order to pay for Ferrari. It's not Drive to Survive, but let me tell you, I was quite interested. Ferrari is not a waste of your time at all. Penelope Cruz, who is such an amazing actress, plays Ferrari's wife. Aaron Rodgers' ex-girlfriend plays Ferrari's mistress. And there's an interesting part of this movie related to his children, and I won't spoil that, but even back then, there were people having children with multiple people. All right, let's talk about Trevor Bauer. This guy's a little like herpes. He just doesn't go away and just flames up every once in a while. And he's flaming right now. And it's not regular chapstick that's going to matter. You're going to need an entire Z-pack to deal with this. Trevor Bauer announced yesterday on his own Twitter that he is going to pitch against the Yankees on March 24th. My first thought when I read that line is, oh my God, who signed him? And then he said, I am pitching for the Diablos. The Diablos Rojos del Mexico. They're a professional baseball team in the Mexican League based in Mexico City, Mexico. And they have promised him that he can start on regular rest from now through, let's say, May, so he can be all ready when a major league opportunity comes his way. Trevor, may I help you? I hope they're paying you, because a major league opportunity is not coming your way. Now, I grant you, this is more exciting than facing minor leaguers on a backfield when you face the Dodgers minor leaguers. You are facing a Yankees lineup on March 24th. And toward the end of spring training, you're going to get the regular lineup, and they're each going to get 2 to 3 at-bats. And you're going to get to say, look what I did. 5 innings of shutty, 3 hits, no walks, 4 punchies. And the impact that will have on your signing is zero. All of the people who are tweeting, hey, our rotation needs help, why aren't we giving Bauer a chance? Hey, Bauer will play for the minimum, let's just sign him. I get what you're all doing, but you are missing a very, very important part of this equation. There is no major league team that will sign Trevor Bauer. How many more times can I say it? How many different ways do you want me to say it? It's NGTH. God bless him for trying. I can imagine right now what's going on inside the commissioner's office. They're just despondent. His name keeps coming up. They want the focus solely on the games in South Korea that start tomorrow at 6 a.m. They are solely focused on getting this season started. And every Muttengudunishik, they look up and say, oh my God, it's Bauer. It's like a Mal Rev. He tweeted that this will help him stay in game shape, and he'll get to join a rotation immediately if and when an MLB offer comes. So just as a quick FYI, when you sign a player, and let's say you sign a player in June, no matter what that player's been doing, whether he's in the California Penal League, the Mexico League, I don't care what league, if he has not been in your system and he has not pitched at the big league level, you're not coming in to start at the big league level. You go to the minor leagues to have at least a start or two before you're brought in. But Mr. Bauer will not have to worry about that. Good luck on March 24th against the Yankees. Hey, G, take them deep, baby. All right, the NCAA tournament is starting. Can we talk about the Big East Conference? We touched on it yesterday when we talked about Let's Dance. The Big East Conference, in their mind, they got hosed. They got 3 teams in only. Told you they felt like they had 3 snubs. How long was it going to be until the Big East came out with a statement? Bless their souls. It took them a day. Late in the day yesterday, the day after the selection, the Big East released a statement. Let me ask if this sounds familiar in any way. And let me give you a hint. Remember when FSU got totally screwed? When was that? I don't know. A couple of years ago, they were going to be in the college football playoff. I think they were undefeated or something, and they did not make it. And all of a sudden, there were congressional inquiries, and Senator Scott and Governor DeSantis, everyone had a comment about FSU. Well, the Big East came out with a statement. We're very proud that UConn earned the number 1 overall seed in this year's tournament. Marquette, a number 2 seed, and Creighton, a number 3 seed, give the Big East 3 of the top 10 overall seeds in the tournament. As many as any other league. Oh, was FSU was this year, Coca? That is unbelievable. All right, wipe that out. Here we go. I don't want that to even be part of the show. That's embarrassing. 4869. Remember this year when FSU got screwed out of a spot after an undefeated season as they were not included in the CFP? Well, the Big East is taking a page out of FSU's playbook, and it's starting just with the conference releasing a statement. And in their statement, they say, "We have great respect for the NCAA Men's Basketball Committee and the time and effort that goes into selecting the teams for the tournament. It's a very challenging job. And we have been advised that this year's upsets added to the complexity and contributed to the committee's final bracket selections. Given the high level of play in our league, we are understandably very disappointed that some worthy Big East teams were not selected to participate." Well, so far, this is fine. What's the action item? If you're going to do a statement, you better be saying, "We want an inquiry. We want an investigation. We want a recount." What's the action item? The Big East ended their statement with their action item. "We will be working closely with our schools in the coming months to best position the Big East next year to ensure that we continue to be represented in March Madness in a manner befitting our stature as one of the best conferences in college basketball." How does that work exactly? Are you going to work to make sure that there's no upsets in the conference tournaments that take away bubble teams because of automatic bids? Or are you going to pretend you're the Big Ten in football and you're going to go to the NCAA and say, "We want guaranteed slots. We want the top five teams in our conference to be guaranteed into the NCAA tournament. That's the automatic bids we're thinking about." How do you think the NCAA will respond to that? They'll laugh them right out of the room. "We're going to be working closely with our schools." Working on what? Marketing materials? Working on pick and rolls? What exactly are you going to work on? Some sort of injunction? How about some government intervention? Why don't we get Governor of New York, Kathy Hochul? No need to worry about crime or about giving money to the Bills to build a stadium. I want her involved right now. I want an inquiry this second. "Hey, Chuck, you busy? Senator Schumer, you busy? I'd like there to be an inquiry into why automatic bids are given and why the Big East only had three teams." It's insanity. I have a way better idea for a statement. I think the statement should have been, "We are very pleased that we have three teams in the NCAA tournament. And we need to make sure that next year that we, in addition to the best teams in our conference, that we have a bad team win the conference tournament so that we can have an automatic bid based on a team that otherwise wouldn't have been in." How would that have been for total honesty? I love that. Meanwhile, the Big East and St. John's and Rick Pitino has decided that he wants to stay involved. He wants to make sure that we know he's not bitter. He came out with a statement. "I believe that six teams from the Big East belonged in the field. I know our players, along with Providence, are totally disappointed with the decisions made. But not having Seton Hall? That's flat out wrong." Rick, who are you fooling? You're telling me that you're all sad for your players? Go listen to Nothing Personal from yesterday. "You're so sad that you declined the invite from the NIT, ending the careers of your seniors. Unless we can get them another year of eligibility, maybe they'll apply for that because they're so happy playing for you." I think at some point a politician is going to release a statement like they did in the FSU situation. Someone's going to release something because this Big East snubbery, it's just not going away. Nothing personal pick of the day. It really is a different world. It's a different world right now. I remember I grew up not able to stay awake. I had a bedtime when I was in school. I wonder if I had a bedtime in high school. I think I did. I think it was like 8:30 and I was supposed to be all excited that I got to stay up till 8:30. And then I would get left notes what happened with the Knicks. I was such a big Knicks fan. When the Knicks were on the West Coast, I was always despondent beyond repair because I could never watch the games. And there was no internet. I had to wake up and call 976-1313 unless I had a note slipped under my door saying, "Knicks lose to Nuggets, Knicks lose to Warriors, Knicks lose to Lakers." We always lost on the West Coast. That's how it felt, at least. So I had the Warriors minus 5 over the Knicks because the Knicks don't beat the Warriors in Golden State. And I forgot to tell you that this is not the Knicks of old and this is not the Warriors of recent. Curry, Thompson, Green, they're not even in the top 5, top 3s. And I completely missed that. We had the Warriors minus 5 over the Knicks and we lost. We are 34-37. But guess what, Barry? Looks like we made it. We made it to baseball season. Although we only get 2 games to choose and then we're back to spring training until March 28th. But we've got a game. Now, the game is tomorrow at 6 a.m. The game's going to be going on during tomorrow's show, but I have to make the pick for today. You've got Tyler Glasnow going against Yu Darvish. This is an outstanding game. Yu Darvish is an underdog in this game and his Padres, the Soto-less Padres, the Machado-filled Padres, but they're going against Ohtani in his first game as a Dodger. When you're looking at Betts, Ohtani, Freeman at the top of your lineup, you're looking at Tyler Glasnow, who is an outstanding pitcher, probably not an ace, but an amazing number 2. And the money line is minus 205. I'm not taking it. Instead, my pick of the day for the first baseball game of the year, we are taking the Dodgers on the run line. That means the Dodgers have to win by more than 1 run. And we're only laying 120 to win 100 or 12 to win 10. That is our pick of the day. We'll be back tomorrow. It's just business. This is nothing personal.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.